Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Sachin Jain. He is the president and CEO of The Scan Group. Sachin, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Nick. Really great to be with you.
So, always important to get the background of folks. You've got an interesting background. You've certainly been through some interesting companies. Share a little bit of the details of how you got here and your journey to this point.
Yeah, so I'm a physician by training, but have had tours of duty in the federal government, pharma industry, managed care, and care delivery. And I've had the privilege of seeing healthcare through a number of different lenses, and it's helped me see some of the opportunities and some of the problems that we have as a collective. And so broadly what I would say is that I'm committed to trying to make healthcare better. But I have, a recognition that there's many ways to actually do that.
I love that answer. I'm going to steal that at some point because I have a similar sort of history, but not quite the same, paths or opportunities. So that's great. One of the things that sort of drove this and drove this conversation was a piece that you wrote a little while ago that talked about death by pilot and the scourge of incrementalism. And you could tell... probably from afar that my neck was bristling a little bit as I read this or at least read the title. Tell us what was in there and what your thinking was so that we could talk about this.
Well, having been in the healthcare improvement game for most of my career, all of my career, I can tell you one of the things that has always frustrated me has been the very slow pace of change in healthcare and some of the norms that we've developed as an industry around what it takes to actually change healthcare. I think we've all convinced ourselves that change in healthcare needs to be slow, plotting, consensus-based, incremental. And I think that there are opportunities for us to make quantum leaps, so to speak, in the performance of our healthcare delivery system that, we frankly don't take. And I think this last year, the COVID-19 pandemic actually showed us that when pushed to, the healthcare system can actually move really fast in a new direction. I think we have to get outside of the mindset that it is going to require strong extrinsic forces to actually transform the industry and start to begin to think how we can do this from within. I think we have a savior complex in American medicine that Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and JP Morgan are going to change the game, that the incumbents actually are off the hook in some ways from the responsibility to actually drive real change in the delivery of care. And I think that that is a false paradigm that we've adopted. And I personally am committed to at least trying to stimulate or spark a conversation around us moving faster, more deliberately in a direction that I think all of us want to go in, but frankly, where we don't necessarily have the leadership will and the momentum to get there. We say all the right things in healthcare, Nick, but the gap between what we say and what we actually do is so wide, and I would say widening in some respects, that I think we have to call the question about what I have increasingly started calling our authenticity crisis in U.S. healthcare. It's nothing short of that, given this gap between what we say we do and what we actually do.
So I want to say, I don't know that we've settled. I think we've resigned ourselves to this incremental steps. I mean, that's certainly how I feel. Some of my colleagues, the folks I interact with, are sort of, it's almost a resignation of I can't change things. And my pushback around incremental steps, and I agree with you. I mean, I think shoot for the stars. And anybody that knows me knows that for me, the space program and that quantum leap of innovation. But if you look back, you find that it's full of all of these small steps that were necessary to sort of go through to get to that reach. So I think it's about setting the goals, but finding the steps within. Does that conflict with your sort of challenge to the status quo?
It doesn't conflict, but what I would tell you from a diagnosis perspective is that we have very few leaders calling their shot, so to speak, you know, pointing to right field and saying, we're going to hit a home run. We have a lot of organizations where the leader is saying, we're going to hit a double, we're going to hit a single, we're going to take some pitches and hopefully get on base, but we're not necessarily going to hit a home run. And I think we've convinced ourselves that home runs are either impossible or worse, reckless. And I would say we need more players in this ecosystem who are willing to point at the stands and say, I'm going to hit a home run. Now, many of them will not, but what we suffer from more broadly in this industry is a lack of courage. And we've actually even stopped calling things by their names. And we've invented terms of art to make ourselves feel better. So I think the best example of this is probably social determinants of health, where we've now created an industry of non-evidence-based interventions around food and housing and transportation that make us feel better in the moment, instead of calling it what it is, which is racism and poverty. And I think how you define a problem ultimately influences how you solve a problem. And I would say we've not necessarily defined our problems all that well in U.S. healthcare. And we need a greater level of specificity of what it is that we're going after. And we've created this whole industry around value-based care. And we talk about value. And we've created chief value officers in healthcare organizations. And I look at this stuff and I say, that is a great way for us to say we're doing something without actually doing anything. And again, I think we need more leaders in healthcare, fewer administrators. We've got a lot of folks who say the right things, but no one holding them accountable for not necessarily doing the right things. And another great example of that, just to kind of further illustrate the point, is how much industry uproar there was around George Floyd last year. And every organization put out a statement that said, we stand with Black Lives Matter. We stand with George Floyd. We ultimately believe in a more just society. We are anti-Asian hate. When you double click into those organizations and you look at what's actually happening under the hood and what is changing in real time, so little is actually changing. And so we've convinced ourselves that putting out the press release is actually doing the work. And again, I can just give you illustration after illustration of that. And the press release is not the work. And that's why I call this an authenticity crisis in U.S. healthcare.
I think, great points. And, my sense of that similar feeling exists absolutely across the board, providing verbiage that says we're doing this, but not actually doing it is to me extraordinarily frustrating. One of my models that I always point to, oftentimes around the space program, but Gene Kranz, if you're familiar with him, he was the controller for the Apollo 13 disaster.
Yep.
Famous for saying failure is not an option. And yep. He had essentially, and what I found interesting about his approach to this was, it was not failure is not an option. Okay, we've got it. We're Apollo 13 is saved. We've got the astronauts back. It was, we're not failing right now. Here we go about it. And I think part of the strategy, and I wrote a piece a long time back in the crisis that said we needed a Gene Kranz, which essentially tried to sort of highlight the skill set. And I'm trying to sort of tease out that in the healthcare space to your diagnosis that says, what is it that we need to do? So, sure, we've made the statement now. Gene basically said, right, assemble my resources and go after each of these problems, which, I'm going to say it feels a little bit incremental. It's not, it was, we've got to fix the power problem. How do we do that in healthcare? We have this ongoing challenge, but we have to find a way to start fixing these problems that have been here for as long as I can remember.
So Nick, I'll tell you why I think the Gene Kranz quote doesn't apply.
Okay.
And I appreciate the spirit of it, certainly. I think it doesn't apply because we are failing and we're not saying we're failing. So we're saying failure is not an option, but the reality is we're failing. Why is it that when in our networks, a loved one gets sick and the first thing that we have to do is actually like put a bat signal out to the universe of our contacts to say, how can I get in for good care for myeloma or, lymphoma or whatever it is. These are folks who believe in the consumerist fantasy that we've perpetuated in American healthcare. when in fact the right thing should just be happening for people. You get diagnosed for something, you should get, you know, into the right, see the right people with at the right centers with the right kinds of care. Instead, you know, we've created a system that is so segregated in some regards, and so inaccessible in some regards, that it literally requires, you know, kind of having, you know, top 5 or 10% social capital in this country in order to actually have the right things happen for you reliably. And then God forbid you're a person of color who shows up in an emergency room or an inpatient ward, regardless of your credentials, regardless of who you are, you get treated like a second or third class citizen in some double digit percent of American hospitals. It's just a basic reality of where we are in American society right now. So we have to think about how we're going to fix these things.
So I think extraordinarily important, and I agree with you, you know, we have failed. I'm trying to focus on, you know, and let's accept that we've failed within healthcare. How do we fix that? Because, you know, to your point earlier, what you said was, well, people have made statements where, you know, Black Lives Matter, you know, we care about these problems, but that didn't do anything. What is the first step a true acceptance? Have we even failed on that score?
It is. It is. And I think, you know, what I always say is future generations will look back at this generation's version of what healthcare is, and we will be embarrassed in the same way that current generations look back at the pre-civil rights era and are embarrassed at, you know, what we were as a nation and what we were as a country. And so the first step to making things better is accepting where we are and actually driving a degree of embarrassment. It's one of the reasons I think we need a so-called civil rights movement in healthcare. And I don't mean just from a racial equity perspective. I mean from a shining a light on how bad things really are. Because I think as a nation, we're living in a form of collective denial about how things, you know, really play out for people. And, you know, the reality is it's so hard for us to even imagine a world in which the color of your skin or the zip code in which you were born actually influences so strongly your health outcomes. I mean, for people who don't carry that burden or carry that weight, it's actually impossible for us to really fully embrace what it is that people experience. I can tell you story after story of, you know, physicians who get treated like second or third class citizens in certain communities if they carry a certain you know, racial or ethnic background. But I can tell you about even more patients, frankly, who when they show up at a healthcare institution where they're supposed to be treated for their medical problems, you know, end up, you know, being disrespected, end up being given, you know, kind of non-evidence-based treatment or approaches, you know, because of implicit bias and explicit bias that exists in the delivery of care. And so, again, I think we have to start calling things what they are. And every time I see a billion-dollar valuation celebrated on Twitter or LinkedIn, I look at this and I say, that's great. How is it solving the real problems that we have? And I think, you know, frankly, you know, they're not, and we're not. And so, again, I think it's a big country. I think we've got big problems. I think the big solution will lie in getting the diagnosis right. And then, frankly, empowering a new generation of leaders who feel comfortable speaking truth about what's actually happening. You know, and I think once a small number of people start speaking the truth, as with all social movements, then even more people will feel comfortable speaking the truth, because what we're doing is we're verbalizing long-held internal beliefs and values and perspectives that people, frankly, have been afraid to verbalize. And once we start to verbalize them, we can begin to have the kinds of conversations that we need to have on management teams and boardrooms and among, you know, kind of, you know, the healthcare industry more broadly about what we're going to do to actually fix it. We've lived in this fantasy that, you know, value-based care has perpetuated this fantasy that everyone can get better and no one can be worse off. And, you know, you and I both know, Nick, that someone's waste is someone's profit. And so if we're going to really kind of lean out our healthcare system, you know, it may mean that we have fewer hospital beds in some markets. It may mean, you know, that we narrow formularies and you know, limit, you know, pharmaceutical choice in some cases. It may mean that we invest highly in primary care to the detriment of specialists, and we kind of refocus our energy on specialty care. But we can't constantly believe that everyone is going to be better off with no one being worse off in a future state healthcare system. And that's not to denigrate the value of any part of the broader system. I think one of the things that defines this industry is that everyone is trying to do a good job. And I can say that having now worked across all these sectors, everyone believes that they're doing good work to solve problems of people. So it's one of these situations where it's don't hate the players, hate the game, but the game needs to be fixed. And I think the problem, Nick, is that people too often look to policymakers and they look to Washington. And we've been taught and trained to look to Washington for the solution. And having been in Washington and now having been in the delivery system and having been in managed care, I can tell you the problem is within. There's no, going to be no magic bullet that comes from DC. And let me tell you something. If you get a magic bullet from DC, it's not going to be a magic bullet because the baby will be thrown out with the bathwater if we start getting across the board policy solutions. But I have to compliment people who've worked in Washington over the last 10 or 15 years in health policy because they've given people a number of instruments through which they can actually actualize the right things, whether it's ACOs or Medicare Advantage programs or the direct contracting program. The policy instruments are all there. What I see is incomplete uptake and execution at the institutional ground level on those policy instruments. So that's where I think we have opportunities that have been so far underexploited.
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and today I'm talking to Dr. Sachin Jain. He is the president and CEO of the SCAN Group. We were just talking about the fundamental flaws in the healthcare system. I feel like we have a diagnosis, but I'm not certain of. You know, one of the challenges that I think about relative to this is the sort of internal bias that we all have and an acceptance of that. I mean, whether you like it or not, and I'm not saying you, I'm saying me, I have a built-in bias that I, even though I'm aware of, still exists and influences behavior. We have selective memory about the past and the impact that that's had. And what you mentioned in there that I think is really important is that this is, ultimately, it's a zero-sum game, right? If you take away from somewhere to give, you can't, there is no magicking out additional resources. We've got a limited pot of money and we have to allocate that as best. And what that tends to do is push people to this position of, well, now you're talking rationing or, you know, death squads or whatever it was that I forget the sort of the emotive terms that came out. And there seems to be a failure to accept that. Do you think that is something that we can face head on and say that there is a limited pot, we have to allocate these resources better?
I think we have to choose our language carefully because what people hear in that is rationing. And what they ought to be hearing is, let's re-engineer a better healthcare system. If I told you that, you know, I could give you a let's just say an automobile for half the price of an existing automobile that performs, you know, twice as well, but you may have to trade off, you know, with a few fewer features, maybe a little bit less customization, you know, maybe a little less color choice. I think most people would take that deal. And the issue is that I think right now, you know, there's so many interests at play here that have confused the dialogue and confused the argument and created massive misinformation. We saw that play out around the Affordable Care Act that, you know, we're ultimately, I think, having a conversation where we're boxing shadows as opposed to actually addressing the problems that exist.
So can you highlight anywhere where you think we're starting to get this right? I mean, you know, we have this sort of widespread problem that's international. I mean, anybody that perceives this to be an American problem, it's not. You just see it in different ways in other countries. Are we getting it right anywhere? Is there anywhere that we can learn from?
You know, I do think there are pockets. I think there's organizations that have kind of some of the right DNA. I think there's also geographies where, you know, there are players that are doing more of the right thing and less of the wrong thing. But, you know, the sad part is when you kind of go under the hood at a lot of organizations that are heralded for their kind of new models or their value-based care, you know, you realize that, again, it's more press release than it is real world delivery. And so, you know, what I do think is that we need to start actually kind of holding ourselves to higher standards of execution and change and transformation. I do think countries that have adopted a stronger primary care orientation usually do better because at the end of the day, you know, paternalism is a really bad word in American healthcare. But the truth is the information asymmetries are so great between patients and clinicians that you do need trusted guides to help you navigate the system efficiently as opposed to leaving you by yourself to kind of wander and try to make the right things happen. So my personal perspective is we need to think about a few principles, and we need real leadership, political leadership, that is going to help drive those principles at a high level. And I would say one of those principles is stronger primary care. You know, second principle I would say is, you know, kind of more power in the hands of physician groups as opposed to, you know, kind of hospitals. And that's not because I think there's anything wrong with hospitals. I just think part of what we need to do more of in American healthcare is manage chronic disease better and keep people well so that the hospital is seen as a failure mode location as opposed to seen as a default for what happens to people as they progress and get older. And so again, I think we have to kind of reimagine the set of organizing principles that we have in American healthcare. And I think it would lead us to a place where people did have things like 24/7 access to primary care, where the emergency room was not a place that you go to get any of your questions answered, but you actually only go when there's a true emergency. And that an inpatient admission to the hospital is what happens to you when you actually need it, as opposed to what I think oftentimes happens, which is the so-called soft admit. Well, they're here, we get paid for a DRG, let's just kind of move them in and move them out when some, you know, higher margin procedure volume shows up to kind of take your place. You know, this whole notion of bed day management within, you know, hospital organizations is really about optimizing case mix and making sure you've got sick patients in the hospital. But when there are no sick patients in the hospital, we start to admit less sick patients. That's just what happens in, you know, when you have capacity. It's supply induced demand. And so again, I think we just need to start talking about these. You know, when I started in this industry, I thought that there were these, like, there was new knowledge to be developed. I actually imagined myself becoming a health services researcher because I felt like we have to discover the right ways to do these things. And with all this due respect to the, you know, many very talented people who are in the health services research field, I think they've helped us figure out a lot of the answers. And the challenge that we have now is less answer development and more implementing that knowledge into practice. So that's the work ahead, I think.
So we've got a limited amount of time left. I just want to close with perhaps one thought that relative to this is, you know, you talked about primary care. And if you pull that thread, which I agree with you 100%, we need more focus on that prevention of disease. The challenge for many folks is to go into that specialty. You pull the thread, you've got to go all the way back to medical education, the cost of medical education. How do we address that?
I think the answer lies in changing how we pay for it, making it a more attractive specialty. I think when most people, when they're young and they imagine themselves as physicians, actually imagine themselves as primary care doctors. And then along the way, they realize that primary care is a bad deal. And because it's a bad deal, they discover radiology, ophthalmology, anesthesiology, dermatology, you know, these fields that, you know, for an hour of work will pay you 2 to 3x, you know, what they pay a primary care physician, even though they oftentimes rely on primary care physicians for referral volume. And so, again, I think we have to rethink, you know, how we pay for primary care docs. And then I think, you know, no new medical schools need to be invented for this. I think that, you know, what we need to do is actually just change the payment system. And I think people will follow. It's not that complicated. People are smart and markets are efficient. People will follow the dollar, not because it's nefarious to follow the dollar. It's just people are rational, economically minded individuals who are going to make good decisions on the margins. And it's better to get paid 3 times as much for the same hour of work than it is to get paid 1/3 as much. So that's kind of how I think this is going to get solved long term.
Fantastic. Well, as usual, unfortunately, we've run out of time. It just remains to thank you for coming on the show. I'm just very excited to sort of have somebody pushing back on the incremental approach, although I will say, as I get to, I still think there are small steps that add up to that big reach. You have to have the big reach. But I'm with you 100%. I think we need radical change. I just think we get there with slightly smaller steps. So, Sachin, thanks very much for joining me. It's been a real delight.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Nick.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, TheIncrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.